Good morning. Welcome to Prayer Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Dorothy Krause. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, your gender, or your family structure. So our Memorial Day service today will be by Steve Krawlis. He is retired from the Army National Guard. He's a 23-year veteran. He's an outreach program supervisor for the Wisconsin Department of Veteran Affairs. He lives in Madison, so he might be out and about if you see him around ever. He also works with kids in drug and alcohol prevention. He's been doing that for 18 years, I believe he said. And he said he got, but he did not drive here today, a brand new Harley on Friday. So if you hear the vroom vroom, look and see if it's him. And one of his big mottos in life lived in service is a life well lived. Please welcome Steve.
Well, good morning. Now, this is, I hope, the height of my nervousness today. So as I speak, this will get better, I suppose. Which is odd, considering I've been doing public speaking since getting sober on May 14th, 1991. And I'm very proud of that, and for a reason that I will talk about later in my presentation. It's not just being sober, it's service to your community, it's service to your fellow alcoholics and drug addicts, and it's a new way of life that as part of a greater health, I guess, both personal and mental. But that's not what I'm here to talk about today. I'm here to talk about veterans' issues and problems facing veterans today, and what we as members of the community can do to assist our veterans. I'll tell you that it's my belief that military service is actually very much in keeping with the principles that I've read about this congregation. It is service to others. It's a commitment to the greater good. It's the brothers and sisters that I served with over a 23-year career, starting out in the Marine Corps as a 17-year-old kid 2 weeks after my 17th birthday, for 5 years in the Marine Corps as an infantryman doing long-range patrol, six-man teams by myself out 20, 25 miles ahead of the main organization. That camaraderie and that sense of purpose it really wasn't denominational, it really wasn't religious. It was just about that connection and that commitment that I had to that Marine standing next to me. And after leaving the Marine Corps after 5 years and not adjusting well to civilian life, which is a very common theme among veterans, I went back in, I joined the Army, and I did 18 years in the Army before I retired in 2006. And one of the things that I noticed as a service member over that span of time was the tremendous amount of difficulty I had reassimilating into civilian life. Even when I left active duty and became a full-time National Guard soldier in my career, I would go to work in my uniform and I would be around people that understood me. And I would get off work at 4:30 in the afternoon and I would drive to my house on Mandrake Road and I would put on my Levi's and my polo shirt and I didn't fit in anymore. And I looked just like my neighbor and I might as well have lived on the moon. And I need to stress something is I'm a Cold Warrior. I'm not a combat veteran in the classic sense, and I'm going to talk about who combat veterans are. I had a job that was very important. I collected intelligence. My job was to observe. It wasn't to carry a rifle and shoot people. It was to hide and observe and report back and tell people what was happening. And I'm truly blessed that I never had to use those skills in active combat. Although many of my friends did and paid the ultimate price. and continue to pay that price now going forward. So what we talk about when I wanted to talk about the issues facing veterans today, it's that background. It's that very common experience and that sense of belonging when you're in uniform and then you're suddenly thrust into civilian life after your tour of duty ends. And for National Guard and Reserve soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, that's, you know, they get uprooted from their civilian life in this part-time job and they get sent to Iraq or Afghanistan or the Horn of Africa or various other places that we're currently engaged in this global war. And for a year, 18 months, 24 months of their life, they're exposed to the harsh realities of warfare. And it doesn't matter if you're a cook or a clerk or a truck driver or an infantryman or a pilot or a mechanic. These days, everybody is a warrior first, and everybody is exposed to the harshness and the dangers of war. I don't know how many veterans we have in the audience right now, and certainly you're under no obligation to identify yourselves, but I bet that you understand where I'm coming from when I speak to that, that it really doesn't matter what you did in the military, that harshness and that reality of conflict is very real regardless of what your job was. And when that tour completes and that veteran returns to civilian life, oftentimes they don't have a job. One of the main concerns that we at the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs are working on this year is veterans employment issues. We're putting on business symposiums to educate employers on the value of hiring veterans and how to understand how veterans think, speak, what items on their resume mean. For instance, towards the end of my infantry career, I became an instructor because my body just flat could not tolerate that type of lifestyle anymore. I fractured 6 vertebrae in my back. I've dislocated my left hip, both shoulders. I have 3 skull fractures. I've broken my left hand 3 times, my left foot twice. I'm a walking medical study. I could probably use somebody's grandson over here who just recently graduated medical school. So what happens is we come back and they're jobless. They're dealing with this rather sudden reintegration into civilian life. And that's, unfortunately, they speak a different language now. And their experiences separate them from the very society that they protected and that they want to reassimilate into. And so as a result of that, our unemployment rate among veterans is nationally, it's about 3 to 3.5% higher than it is among the general population. So depending on how you look at unemployment rate in the United States right now, whether it's 6 or 8%, and whether it's 8% if you count everybody who's unemployed, 6% if you don't count the people who quit looking, you take the veteran unemployment rate is between 11 and 14%, depending on how you do the math. And so we're trying very hard to address that. And in doing that, we're also putting on hiring fairs and bringing those employers in and bringing veterans to those employers to try to assist them in finding jobs. But that's a problem that everybody faces. So that's not new. What I'd like to talk to you about is the increase in incidence of post-traumatic stress. And thankfully, they're starting to take the D off the end of PTSD. When the new diagnostic criteria come out, it'll be post-traumatic stress instead of post-traumatic stress disorder. And the reason why the Veterans Administration and the mental health community is working towards accomplishing that goal is simply because if I have a disorder, I don't want to tell anybody about it. And you know, I'm ashamed to walk up to somebody and say, I have a disorder because I feel like I'm whole. And I don't understand why I have nightmares. I don't understand why I can't sleep at night. I don't understand why my wife doesn't know who I am anymore. And I'm not talking, I'll talk about my personal experiences in a minute, but what I hear from veterans is that's a very common feeling. It's a very common experience. All that's very real, but to come in and say that I have this disorder, there's a stigma attached to that word. And when we're talking about 10 to 30% of veterans returning after multiple tours in the last 6 years are being diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. So either 1 in 10 or 3 out of 10 of every veteran that returns. And I want to give you some perspective on numbers. We've, in the state of Wisconsin since 9/11, we've had over 33,500 veterans return from active service. Okay, that means, and 50% of those are National Guard and Reserve. So they're already members of our community. And they've been uprooted and taken away from their homes and their families, and they serve, and that's voluntarily, and we're all grateful to do that. But then they come back. The other half are active duty soldiers that are gone for 3 or 4, 8 or 12 or 20 years, and their tour ends and they come back to the state of Wisconsin and they try to reintegrate. That's if you take 33,000 and look at 30% of that, suddenly that's an astronomical number for us to have to deal with. And I'll get into some of the steps that you as a group and that we as a state are doing to try to address that. But I do want to talk about one other significant problem, and that is TBI, or traumatic brain injury. I spoke about the multiple concussions that I've received. That's the concussions that they know about. I was on a demolitions range when I was a 19-year-old Marine, and I was teaching the class. And it's when you actually set up a daisy chain, and that's, and bear with me while I tell you how this story works, but a daisy chain is when you light a fuse and you hook it to a length of det cord, and that detonation cord goes out and it branches off to 6 or 8 quarter-pound charges of plastic explosive, and you bury that into the ground. And you use that as an instruction tool to teach them how to set up the explosives, how to set up the detonators, how to set up the fuse line. And oftentimes you have an 18-year-old kid who's been in the military about 9 months is the one that ignites the fuse, and they're nervous and they're afraid and they're jumpy, and they're standing there and you're telling them, don't you light that fuse until I tell you to light it. And you'll see I'm a soldier, right, because I've got the knife hand out, and I apologize. This kid hears me say, when I say pull, and he pulls. And it's the fuse line is set up for 2 minutes, which in a perfect world is plenty of time to walk, not run, up over the berm and get down and wait for it to go boom. And but I have to finish what I'm saying because there's very important safety information. So now I have less than the allotted amount of time. And I say that and I get everybody in front of me like I'm herding young children over the berm. And I'm standing on top of the berm when it detonates. And the blast comes behind my helmet and it lifts my helmet off my head and throws me headlong into the grass on the other side of the berm. Now, I look fine. No scratches, not a single ding. My eyes are red, my ears are ringing. You know, I have a tremendous headache. But honestly, there's no visible instance of my injury. And for 3 days, I didn't report the incident because I'm a tough young Marine and it was just a headache and it's no big deal. And then I finally have to go in and talk to the medics. And they go, you know, you have a traumatic brain injury. And it's these issues that wear on you over time repeatedly. And that's a very common. There's a lot of blast, roadside bombs, you know, explosive devices, vehicle accidents, these types of things. That it's a very common injury, and it's a hidden injury, and it's one that we don't see. So these are the things that we're plaguing veterans as we go forward. Now, what I want to, and the incidence of this is maybe 50% or less, but we don't know who they are until the problems arise and we have to address them. There are organizations out there and there's efforts that are being made. One of us is DryHooch, dryhooch.org. It's a veterans assistance center on Excelsior Drive on the west side of Madison. If you are looking for some place where you can meet veterans, engage with veterans, assist them in their assimilation into the community, be of service in any way that you find. That's a place where veterans go to meet. It was just recently opened last week. It's run by a nonprofit organization out of Milwaukee. It's a tremendous place for healing, and that's where veterans in the community can engage in a non-confrontational, very laid-back environment, have a cup of coffee, and get to know the members of your veteran community. And I strongly encourage all of you to avail yourselves of that organization. And if you ever feel a need, to engage with the veteran community, that's a great place to start. And that can grow into what other organizations are affiliated in. If there's more that you want to do, you can branch out from there. We have I don't want to take too much time. I didn't realize it would fly this fast, and I apologize. We have a Women's Veterans Initiative that I just started 5 weeks ago when I was hired as the outreach coordinator. I have a Women's Veterans Coordinator. Her name is Carolyn Morgan, and she is specifically tasked with engaging women veterans in the community and identifying and trying to assist with homelessness, which is compounded when it's a woman veteran because they tend to have children. And it's not just the veteran that suffers in this case, it's the veteran and the children that suffer. And as you all know, I'm sure, that is far more grave of a problem when it involves children than it is when it involves just the veteran. And as a veteran myself, I know how hard it is to have to deal with these hurdles. I can't imagine what it would be like if I had to worry about my children at the same time. So we're trying to address that. Unfortunately, anytime we have a women veterans homeless facility, we require 24-hour security, a bunch of other things. And Secretary Skokos is trying very hard to get the funding to provide that, but it's limited right now. And then lastly, I want to talk about why I mentioned my sobriety for 21 years. The true danger that we deal with is PTSD combined with drug and alcohol addiction, okay? It is tragic when you see this happen. It's extremely common, post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't want to identify that I have this problem, so I hide it and I attempt to self-medicate it. I tend to self-medicate it by drugs and alcohol. It's what I did. That was the solution I tried. It didn't work, but it masked it well enough for me until when I was 24 years old. And I ended up overdosing in my living room at the age of 24 and was rushed to the emergency room with a 3.75 blood alcohol level. I was lucky enough to survive. I got medical attention when I needed it. My heart stopped twice. I had to be shocked, injected with epinephrine to raise my heart rate. It's a miracle that I'm standing here before you. We lose a veteran to suicide every 80 minutes in this country. It is commonly a combination of post-traumatic stress and drug or alcohol addiction, whether it's by self-inflicted or an overdose or a vehicle accident. The Department of Veterans Affairs considers that to be a suicide. They recently committed to hiring 1,900 additional mental health professionals that over the next 24 months. They've hired several in the state of Wisconsin. The Wisconsin 115th Fighter Wing with the Wisconsin Army National Guard hired a full-time mental health professional. The Army National Guard has hired a suicide prevention specialist, two mental health professionals, and tripled the size of their family outreach programs. They're trying very hard to stem the tide of this program, or stem the tide of this of dangers with our veteran community. But we do actually need your help. And we need your help to reach out. It's not a political issue. It's really a community issue. And I want to thank you, and on behalf of Secretary Skokos and the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, I want to thank each and every one of you for asking me to come speak to you. I hope that you've gotten some benefit out of my coming here. I will tell you this, and this is not part of a professional presentation, but we talk about how military service touches all of us, and I get a lot of flack for these two flowers that I wear on the inside of my arm. And a lot of my friends will say, "You're this big, tough Marine. Why do you have these flowers on the inside of your arm?" And I tear up sometimes when I talk about this. I had two very dear friends, one a U.S. Marine and one a soldier. And in the opening weeks of the Gulf War, the Marine that I served side by side was blown up by friendly fire in Iraq. And he lost his life. In the first 2 weeks of the Afghan engagement, a soldier that I served with on active duty was killed in a roadside bomb. And I wear these tattoos as a form of memory. And I will close on this Memorial Day weekend with this. I loved that poem that you read. But I want to extend that one a little bit further by saying, a soldier never dies in vain, because they always die in the service and protection of their fellow soldier. And as long as we remember that, and we never forget because we promised we wouldn't, then it's all okay, because we serve and we make that sacrifice so you can live a better life and standing up here before you in a congregation made up of people of differing philosophies and differing views, and the fact that you had the compassion to ask me to come here means a tremendous amount to me, and I am honored to be up here to speak before you. And thank you very much.
Invited Steve to stay up here for about 10 minutes or so of discussion. Mary will bring the microphone around.
And please understand, as a representative of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, I'm prohibited from responding to the political side, although I do understand your angst and your concern and your feelings towards that. And I think you might be surprised how much many of the men and women that I work with support your views.
Oh, I'm not.
I think I will tell you that I didn't touch on it today, but the incidence of sexual assault within the ranks is a horrific problem, and it's one that we could never ever devote enough time to the Department of Defense or my organization. It's just simply impossible because of the magnitude of the damage that's done. And my department is charged, and the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs is charged with dealing with the carnage that comes from that conduct. So my heart goes out to you, sir, to you and your family. And I will tell you that as a soldier, a Marine, a veteran, nobody wants peace more than I. I am so tremendously sick and tired of losing my friends, both in conflict and in the conflict that ensues when they come home. I didn't talk about, I have a friend up in Toma who's struggling with PTSD and alcohol addiction, and every time the phone rings and I see it's him, I breathe a sigh of relief because I know he hasn't killed himself yet. And, he calls me and he'll say, I've got my gun out, what am I going to do? And I have to talk him through disassembling it and putting it back away and promising him that it'll get better. And thank God the phone calls are farther between each other now. But, he's done 3 tours. He's done, almost 4 years combined total service. He's been wounded. I don't know how much can be expected to give. And yet he shares the same guilt that I do about when we lose a friend and we feel like we haven't given enough. And that's the mindset that unfortunately continues forward. I live actually right next to the Memorial Mile. And I walked that, and I have coffee with those veterans several times over the course of this weekend. Yeah. I visit them in the middle of the night when they're holding the vigil over the grave markers. And I'm not a member of that organization, but I am quite familiar with them, and I'm quite familiar with the efforts that they're doing. And there's some of my very dear friends are returned from Afghanistan and Iraq and joined that organization. No, they're absolutely a veterans organization, no different than the American Legion or the Veterans of Foreign Wars or the Vietnam Veterans Association or any of the auxiliaries. And actually, there's members of that organization that work for my department. They're not as widely known nationally as some of the more traditional veterans organizations that started post-World War I and were really popularized after World War II. But they, in my opinion, just my opinion, are very similar to the Vietnam Veterans Association that was started after Vietnam when the VFW said, well, that wasn't a declared war, so you can't join the VFW. For years, there was some blocking of Vietnam veterans from joining the VFW. And thankfully, that insult has been corrected. But so no, I consider the Veterans for Peace to be a bona fide service organization. I can tell you that having not served in combat, I don't want to overstep. I don't want to presume to speak for someone else. But there's no place else on this planet that I would rather be than standing next to somebody else in uniform. The fact that my body prevents me from doing that job anymore, I was telling one of my friends, he's done 8 tours in Afghanistan. When I'm looking out at the world, I can't see what's behind these eyeballs. And in my head, I'm 20 years old and I can carry a 110-pound pack and walk for 5 days with an M16, and I don't even think twice about it. But then when I get out of bed and my back sounds like Rice Krispies, and my cat running in front of me can cause a catastrophic knee injury, that I have to understand that I can't do it. But it's really hard to explain. It really is. But and then I've served with guys who did one tour in Afghanistan, got home, got out, put their uniforms in a closet, burn them, whatever. They don't ever want to have anything to do with the military again. And I certainly, by no means, do I disparage that, because in this current environment, less than 1% of the U.S. population ever puts a uniform on. First of all, sir, thank you for your service. From the bottom of my heart, I don't care what you did or whether you got out and ran back home and never wanted to be a part of it again. The fact of the matter is that when your country called, you stepped up. Whether it's military service, the Peace Corps, community service, working in a soup kitchen, or protesting the war, I think when you speak from your conscience and you take your responsibility within your community, a life lived in service is a life well lived. I'd be happy to address both those, and I'll address the initiatives first. And I'll tell you, I specifically did not include that in my talk because they're passed by the current administration, these three bills actually, and I didn't want to turn this into a political talk, and I don't believe that you are, so I'm happy that you asked me so I can speak to this. There's three initiatives that have been started. First of all, a bill was recently passed and signed in as part of the Year of the Veteran, where they are encouraging the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services and other regulatory and licensing agencies to give direct credit for military experience to licensure for professional license. Specifically, we're working with the Department of Defense for respiratory therapists to give the training that you received in the military towards licensure in the state of Wisconsin. But more importantly, we have the Veterans in Piping, which is a steam fitters program. We have just started WDBA had no hand in this except to publicize this. This is your BJ Ganim, your Dane County Veteran Service Officer, that did this. Started a pilot program with MATC in the insurance industry to take veterans with administrative experience and give them credit towards their insurance certificates and get them jobs with participating insurance companies. But the Department of Safety and Professional Service has been tasked by the Capitol to engage Department of Defense and look for places where we can give credit towards licensure for veterans. Secondly, there's a Reciprocity Act where if an active duty service member is transferred here either for training or for a tour of duty and their spouse is licensed in another state, their state of Wisconsin is now required by act to give reciprocity, free licensure if they've paid their license, and equivalency so they can practice here instantly as soon as they get here. And then lastly, there is work with Department of Workforce Development and the Department of Veterans Affairs, where we're engaging skill sets and using the DWD computer system to coordinate and place veterans in jobs based on their experience. Talked about alcoholism. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is not the agency tasked with doing that. We have homes for retired veterans, and then we have educational programs. But I'll tell you, the federal VA has a phenomenal treatment center here in Madison, in Toma, and all throughout the United States. And they're doing a very good job of providing inpatient treatment at no cost to the veteran and long-term support. And the Dry Hooch is working in cooperation with the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs. And we're gonna have AA meetings specifically for veterans and busing veterans from those treatment facilities to the Dry Hooch so they can get 12-step self-help counseling. So again, there's only so much that the federal and state VA can do, because unfortunately everything comes down to money and we don't get to determine where that comes from. But we're trying to engage that. I'll be happy to stay here afterwards if anybody would like to talk to me one-on-one. So I'm being ushered, I think, off the stage. So thank you very much.
Thanks so much. I'd like to ask Steve to come up one more time to read our closing words.
I believe this might be somewhat appropriate. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be weak. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be human. It's from all these elements that we grow. Kevin Morris, thank you.